Hello, everybody, and welcome to another Spiritual Hollywood Hour. I am Kate Romero, your host of Spiritual Hollywood. And as usual, I can't say another thing until I say thank you to BBSRadio.com, Don Newsom, Douglas Newsom, and Seth Hendrick for giving us this wonderful platform to raise consciousness using Hollywood and the excellent guests that we are so blessed to have every week are impacting many people. And I want to thank the listeners for being with us this week. We have a wonderful guest for you and a real treat. His name is Robert Mack, and the topic is Happiness from the Inside Out, the Art and Science of Fulfillment. And that website is www.happinessfromtheinsideout.com. And I'll just spell that out for you, www.happinessfromtheinsideout.com. I encourage you guys to call in because this topic tonight and this person we'll be interviewing is basically life coach to the stars, and the journey that Rob has been on has been through all kinds of ways to discover what his purpose is, and through just his passion to find out what that was, his journey took him, he entered the public eye actually through a career in entertainment with Wilhelmina Models. And since then, he's made guest appearances on television shows for MTV, NBC, CBS, and UPN, and shot commercials and advertisements for numerous clients across the world. Prior to his career in entertainment, Rob attended Swarthmore College on academic scholarship, where he majored in psychology. And upon graduation, Rob worked as a consultant and executive coach for one of the four largest of the most successful consulting companies in the world, which was Deloitte & Touche. While there, he worked with Fortune 100 companies and executives across the world to help them optimize performance and satisfaction. After spending a major portion of his life actively engaged in deep personal growth, Rob graduated from the University of Pennsylvania's Master's in Applied Positive Psychology program in August of 2007. Positive psychology is the study of what makes life worth living. Rob has been many things in life, a valet, a movie theater cashier, an usher, a furniture mover, a professional model, an actor, a janitor, jobless, and a consultant, and more. Now he writes and speaks to people about ways to live happier, healthier, and wealthier existences, and he also serves as a resident life coach at Miami Life Center at South Beach in Florida. Again, that website is happinessfromtheinsideout.com, and I'd like to bring Rob on with the statement that identity is just another type of attachment. Welcome, Rob.
Thank you so much for having me, Katie. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. What a compelling book you've written. It's very entertaining to read, and the way that you express yourself sort of takes us on the journey with you, where you would be like knocking yourself in the head going, well, that didn't work. And moving on to the next thing, and you know, you crafted it very well in just showing us what your journey was like, and I'd like for you to tell our listeners more about identity being just another type of attachment.
Yeah, it's interesting because as you began sort of reading that biography, which you delivered so well, I was thinking, wow, it's interesting. Did I do that and that and that? It sort of all blew by so quickly in retrospect. But it's interesting. I think a lot of us sort of seek ourselves and sort of seek our happiness through things, and sometimes those things are material things or material trappings. Sometimes they're relationships, and other times they're identities. You know, for a very long time, I sort of saw myself as a consultant, and so that was sort of how I sought my happiness out, or sort of who I thought I was. I was a consultant, and everything else sort of was only subtext to me being a consultant. And then other times I was a model, and so that was who I was, and so I would act and dress like a model. And it's interesting because what happens is, when you do that, is that you set yourself up for a little bit of disappointment, because suddenly when things don't go well from a modeling perspective, or things don't go well from a professional perspective with respect to, let's say, consulting business, then you're disappointed and you're frustrated and you're unhappy. And, we're all so much more than just the jobs that we work or the people that we date or the achievements or accomplishments that we've won. And so if you can sort of see through all that to the bigger picture, and the bigger picture is that, you know, you're first of all, you know, a spiritual being and having a human existence or a physical existence, and then sort of work backwards from there, I think you'll sort of stack the odds in your favor with respect to happiness and living a successful life, but the one that one's that is also fulfilling as well.
Very well said. And I know from my own personal experience, and also it's all throughout your book, which once again is Happiness from the Inside Out, The Art and Science of Fulfillment, which I'm sure is available everywhere. I noticed that one of the central themes is that happiness is totally contingent upon you. Happiness is your responsibility. It is not the responsibility of any person, place, or thing.
Mm.
Happiness comes from the inside out. And that can be true in this economy, which basically, for me, if you ask me about this economy, I believe that we're in a position of pure expansion. And that it's necessary to be in this position for the expansion that's coming. And I believe that collective consciousness has latched onto a negative about it, and that's the alarm that we're hearing everywhere about the economy. So I want to bring up the economy in the context that nothing can steal your happy, because you're bringing happy to the party, right?
I love that. I love the way that you put that. You put that so in such a poignant way. I absolutely believe that, at the end of the day, everything is filtered through your own perception and filtered through your own beliefs, and you ultimately are responsible for how you feel in any particular moment. And that doesn't mean that losing your job or going bankrupt or losing somebody that's really important in your life or losing anything or having anything necessarily negative happen doesn't mean that those things don't impact you, but it means that ultimately you're always left with the ability to spin those experiences and those events in a way that makes you feel better, in a way that supports you and empowers you. And, as they say, all gifts don't come in pretty wrapping papers. And I think that's 100% true. I lost my job a very long time ago when I was working for that fantastic consulting firm. I thought it was the worst thing in the world that could have possibly happened to me in the moment. But as time went by, I found a way to tell a better feeling story about it. And I realized that there were great gifts and opportunities disguised sort of within that seeming adversity. And so I absolutely believe what you're saying, and I'm confident that we are in a period of rapid expansion, and to a large extent we're all sort of doing our best to catch up with the expansion that we're experiencing on the outside with an equivalent expansion on the inside, meaning that we're trying to sort of catch up from the perspective of self-awareness and deeper insight and introspection and things like that. And so I love what you have to say there, and I think that you're spot on.
Well, thank you for that. And another way to look at this, too, is, people think that they can hide their secret thoughts, but they really can't, because their secret thoughts are what shows up as their life.
Wow. Yeah, one of my favorite quotes is a quote that basically goes like this, that, people imagine thought can be kept secret, but it cannot. Thought quickly crystallizes into habit, and habit solidifies into circumstance. And I just think that's so poignant, because often I'll have clients come see me, and I joke with them, in a way, and I say, listen, I can probably tell you what you're thinking by looking at what you're living. And so, now that's a huge, of course, generalization, but largely you can often tell what a person is thinking and the beliefs that they hold about themselves and about the world by just noticing how they go about living their life.
Well, yeah, and if their shoes have holes in them and they're not shined and they're driving a Bentley, there's something up there.
That's a good example. Absolutely. There's something up there. Absolutely.
Yeah, and, another thing is that, what we think about, we bring about. And a lot of times, most often, me included on my journey many years ago, I didn't even know that I didn't know that I didn't realize that I was a negative thinker. And when I started stalking my thoughts and discovering the things that I was allowing to be said to myself by me, to me, had that been a friend of mine or an acquaintance of mine, I would have filed a restraining order against them for some of those things that I was saying to myself.
Absolutely, Katie. That's fantastic.
When you get clear on that and you notice what kind of things you're saying to yourself, if you judge yourself, others will judge you. If you loathe yourself, others will find something to loathe about you. And we do teach others how to treat us by how we're treating ourselves. And I firmly believe, which one thing I enjoyed so much about your book, is we're very much in alignment that happiness is the best gift you can give to yourself, to your family, to your life, to the world, because you're raising frequency, and that is a lot of people don't know that they're so important that their frequency in the world matters. When,
wow.
And in fact, if you were not on this planet, there would be such a missing that would not be part of this tapestry. There would be threads missing, which would be you. And a lot of us don't know that we're that valued.
Phenomenal. Phenomenal. I 100% agree. You know, a lot of us have the notion that we can somehow buy ourselves sort of happiness or buy others happiness by becoming unhappy enough, or that, you know, if we can only find a way to torture ourselves long enough and hard enough, we'll find happiness out there somewhere. But the truth is that there really is no happy ending to an unhappy journey, and that the best thing that you can do for yourself, obviously, and that you can do for others, especially within the context of a relationship, is get happy. You know, the happiest people in the world in the long run tend to be the most successful, and we have the data and science to now support that, that the happiest people in the world end up experiencing the best and happiest and longest term relationships. They tend to get married and stay married longer and are happier in those relationships. They make about $750,000 more over the course of their life. They experience better health, and for all intents and purposes, they experience a better life. But it all starts with getting happy. You know, there's something incredibly productive and creative about being happy. And so once you realize that joy is the point, and that joy is not only the ultimate success, but it also leads to success, now you've got an additional reason, or in fact many, to get happy today.
Yep, exactly. And further, to take it a step further, we're born as pure joy. We were born with it, so it hasn't left. We've just forgotten where we put it. Or we buried it underneath so much muck that we don't know that it's still alive. But it's in there, living and talking to us constantly, sending us signals, intuition, signs and wonders that happen around us that are, it's really our joy and our birthright of our divinity speaking to us to say, please let me live through you. Please let me live through you. I'm here. I'm alive. And I want to be with you. I want to live through you. And, you know, I believe there are people listening right now that are resonating with what I just said. When you're driving through a beautiful park, or you're walking through a beautiful park, or you're out in nature, or you're just sitting with a cup of tea reflecting on your life, and you get that little urge and that little knock and that little knowing that says there's more, there's so much more, and then you feel inspired for a minute. That's the spark that I'm talking about. What action steps would you give our listeners, Rob, on how to get that spark fanned into a flame?
Yeah, I love that. And something that I want to mention right before I get to those sort of steps that at least have worked for me is that if you look at little kids, you know, I had this conversation today with a friend. If you look at little kids, they're such joyful, loving little creatures. And it's interesting that as they begin to grow up and they experience, quote-unquote, the real world, and they hear the messages that are sort of communicated to them through society and through very well-intentioned people, and you see what happens, that they become dysphoric and depressed, you realize that it's not that there's anything wrong with them when they're born necessarily. There's nothing wrong with any of us. But as we go about our lives, we very quickly begin to replace our own sort of happiness navigation system or emotional guidance system with that of other people's. And so we become a little misguided. But you know, one of the things, I think the most important thing that you can do with respect to happiness is to make it a target. Most of us don't make it our dominant intent. We don't make it our top sort of objective or priority. And we don't make it the ultimate currency in your life. If you can just find a way to, instead of aiming, let's say, for success or aiming for achievement or aiming for any of those other things, but just aim for joy and begin to judge everything in your life and redefine everything in your life, including success, in terms of the amount of joy that you feel by the activities that you sort of pursue and the thoughts that you sort of think and everything else that you entertain in your life, you realize that your life will become a better feeling sort of entity almost immediately. Just begin to make happiness a target, and doing that one thing will change your life almost immediately. The second thing that sort of comes in line with that is to also realize that you've got to spend as much time pursuing and dedicating yourself to happiness as you would any other pursuit. That, you know, if you want to be a professional violinist, let's say, you know, you have to at least dedicate about 10,000 hours to playing the violin and practicing before you're the age of 16 or 17. The same is true of most professional sports. and most all, almost all endeavors that you need at least, they say about, it's about a 10-year is the gold standard. And so the same is pretty much true of happiness. That you, something you've got to practice, and you want to learn as much as possible about what leads to a happy life and what doesn't lead to a happy life from a personal perspective, as you can. So I think those are probably the top two tips. If you can just, you know, find a way to, make happiness a target and to dedicate yourself to learning as much as you can about happiness and what brings you personally, what brings you happiness, you will inevitably, and I guarantee it, experience a happier life, you know, immediately.
Right. Now, let me see if I can say it another way, and you tell me if I've hit the target. For me personally, when I had that moment about 20 years ago of I'm assessing my life, I was a single parent, I realized I'm not really happy, and I'm a role model for my child. I want to do something about this.
Yeah.
And I started researching what I was feeling, what I believed in, what my values were, and honestly what I came up with was, I don't even know. And then I started to get to know myself. And I started to create my values. And when I made the list of my values, I noticed that happiness was at the bottom of the list, top. Being a mom was at the top. And to me that meant sacrificing myself so that my son could thrive. And no, and it was all backwards because, you know, if there's a prayer, as Michael Bernard Beckwith would say, if there's one prayer you can pray in a day, make it for yourself. Because till you're thriving, no one in your life can. So I switched around my values and put fun and happiness at the top, and all the things that were important to be a really good and emotionally available parent. And what that caused in me was to become my own beloved. And when I fell in love with me, warts and all, and learned to accept all the parts of myself that I thought were flaws because someone who was unkind told me that they were flaws when I was little, I gave up those lies and replaced them with my truths. And over time, I have such an abundance of uncaused joy in myself that no matter what's going on around me, I have at my core this wellspring of joy and happiness that I worked hard for about 20 years to get to and to maintain and sustain. And I make it a priority in my life every day to protect that and nurture that and love that and just keep giving that life and feeding that. So really the key to happiness, I believe, is learning and accepting the greatness of you. And maybe just for fun, try on writing down the things you think are flaws about you and consider for a moment in a fairy tale land story that those are your greatest gifts.
I love
See
it.
How your life would be.
Yeah, I love it. You know, one of the things that I, what I love about what you said and why I think it resonates with me so deeply and why it's at the heart of, you know, happiness from the inside out is because what you've essentially said is that, you know, when you make friends with yourself and find something to appreciate about yourself, you begin, you know, this love affair that lasts a lifetime. And I think that's 100% true, that most of us have a lot of difficulty sort of finding things about ourselves to appreciate and making our own happiness our top priority. But let's face it, you know, our happiness is our job. It's nobody else's job, and you can't delegate happiness. You can't outsource it to somebody else or to the experiences or, you know, events or relationships in your life. It's not anybody else's job. It's not anybody else's responsibility, and it's certainly nobody else's privilege. And so when you come to realize that and realize that when you try to do that, when you try to put happiness in the hands of a condition or you put it in the hands of a circumstance or a relationship or somebody else, what you do is you render yourself powerless anytime that you're feeling anything less than happy. And so I absolutely sort of agree with you, and that resonates with me very, very deeply. A lot of us have difficulty doing that because we feel guilty. We feel that in some way, if we put happiness first, that we're going to end up being selfish people. And what science is showing us over and over again, and something that we all know intuitively anyway, is that the most charitable, generous, and kind people in the entire world are the happiest people as well. So happiness leads not only to charity and generosity and kindness, but being generous and kind and all those things lead back to happiness as well. So it's this incredible upward spiral. So there's something very, very true in what you're saying, and I think that your listeners and folks really do get that, and they're getting it even more as we talk about it, I think.
Yeah, and I love that you said the words upward spiral, because that's the way my husband and I live. We have an upward spiral relationship where we set each other up to win. So we're partners in business and in life, and just really enjoying ourselves immensely. And what's really great is about 2 years before we got together, unbeknownst to each of us at the time, we were both working on ourselves internally, mm-hmm. Like making it a number one priority, like taking 60% of our day and spending it on personal growth,
right.
and the
wow.
other 60% on our business. So
wow.
I didn't know he was doing that. He didn't know I was doing that. And then when we got together and we realized that personal growth was our number one priority,
mm.
which brings happiness,
yeah.
It was a natural fit. And, you know, I just thought he was my best friend, and it turned out that he had these feelings for me he was harboring, and one day he sprung it on me, and I was like a deer in the headlights. I was like, what are you doing? What are you doing with my brother? I really like you as a brother. And he's like,
yeah.
well, I like you as a oh. sacred partner. I'm like, what the heck is that? And he goes, I
wow.
want to be your boyfriend. And I'm like,
that's incredible.
Oh, okay. So I wear a different hat now, and I haven't stopped smiling since, and
wow.
I'm smiling like crazy now. And, you know, and what you were saying about when you lose that happiness that's dependent on outside sources,
yeah.
then you have disempowered yourself completely. And the way, I really love what you say in your book, the way to empower yourself is to know that you control the weather in your own emotional skies.
Absolutely. That within yourself exists this sort of invincible summer, you know, even despite the winter, you know, the wintry kind of conditions that are sort of existing without, you know, outside of yourself. So I think that's 100% true. You know, you remind me, as you told me that, tell us all that fantastic sort of story about your husband and whatnot. I think it's just so fantastic because it reminds me of this sort of this incident that happened as when I was a little kid, and I remember going, you know, boarding my first flight to get, you know, take an airplane from, I think it was Pittsburgh somewhere to Florida, and my mom or the stewardess came on the air and said, listen, you know, before, in case of an emergency, before securing the oxygen mask of those folks around you, make sure you secure your own first. And I remember thinking, panicking as a child, thinking, oh my goodness, if something happens and the plane goes down, my mom is going to secure her own oxygen mask. What's going to happen to me? And it's interesting now, as an adult, I understand the point of all that, because if my mom wasn't to secure her own oxygen mask, then all of us, right, as kids, would have been left completely helpless and not able to do anything or fend for ourselves at all. And so the important, I think, sort of point there in that story is that if you don't take care of your happiness, then you won't have anything else to give anybody else anyway. And so I love that about your own sort of story there, because that's exactly what you and your partner did, is that you both individually focused on your personal growth, and you focused on becoming happy individuals, authentically happy individuals, and then you came together both as sort of complete or whole individuals, and you created a very wholesome type of relationship. And I think that's such a poignant story that you have there.
Yep, and the metaphor about the airplane and the oxygen mask is a wonderful metaphor about our value and how, unless we take care of ourselves first, we really have nothing to give to anyone else. Because, you know, putting it on the child first renders you pretty much like the last one to get the oxygen. And
absolutely.
You could black out before you get it and not be able to do anything, including saving yourself.
Exactly. You can help so many more people if you put on yours first. If you don't put on yours first, you might be able to help one person out, but then you're ultimately going to, you know, die of suffocation, and then nobody else will, you know, you won't be able to help anyone else. And so the most benefit that you can have for everybody in the world is to secure your own oxygen mask, and then realize that as you're safe and sound, you can help, you know, more than just one. You help 10 or 15 or 20 of the whole plane.
Right. Then you can truly live. And
exactly.
A couple of great things I got from your book, many, many things, but I just really want to share this with our listeners, because it really, really struck me. And, I go through the human condition just like everybody else and have those moments where, you know, I get into a little bit of a funk and need to pull myself out of it. And the key is catching yourself in the act.
Definitely.
And I'm going from funk to catching myself in the act, pulling myself out of it so quickly now that it hardly even matters in my day.
Mm-hmm.
And if I stayed in that funk, it would ruin my day and maybe my week and month and year and who knows what.
Yeah.
But what I got from your book is fear is having faith that things won't work out.
Mm-hmm.
So fear is placing faith in the idea that things won't work out, which
yeah.
causes anxiety and panic attacks and making choices that don't set you up to win and
right.
completely shooting yourself in the foot. And that love is having faith that things will work out.
Right, right. Yeah,
so,
I think one of the things that I'm glad that you brought that up, and I like the way that you described it so well. You know, one of the things that I've noticed over the course of my life is, or one of the sort of thoughts that I've had is that we're really, you know, they say that every emotion can be boiled down to two emotions. You have fear and you have love. And that even fear really is love in a way, meaning that that fear is really afraid of losing love. And so one of the things I've noticed is that, you know, every subject in your life is really two subjects. It's the having of something and the lack of something, the pro and the con, the advantage and the disadvantage. And the more that you can practice focusing on those things that are positive, the more that you can focus on finding the seed of equivalent benefit in your life, the better off your life will be. But not only that, the more you practice, the better you'll get. And before you know it, you know, it will become sort of second nature and become much more effortless than it is to you now. And I've learned that over the course of my life. At first, everything is very difficult. You know, the first 4 hours of a diet, you know, everybody's an optimist. But with, you know, but with time, you become better and better and better. And before you know it, you know, you've lost the 10 pounds, or you've changed your career, or you've recovered from the illness that you have, or you've recovered from the loss that you've had. So it's just practice like anything else.
Right. Everything is. And, you know, the best way for anyone to get to Carnegie Hall is to practice.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yep. And I just would like to let our listeners to know that want to give out your life coaching website, which is robmaclifecoach.com. That's robmaclifecoach.com. That's robmaclifecoach.com. And, you know, the topic of identity just being another attachment really makes you an excellent life coach to the stars, because, you know, having celebrity is wrapped up in ego, and a lot of our brightest stars end up burning out because they reach this, they start believing their own press, and then
yes.
They lose themselves, and they don't have that happiness they had anymore because they're starting to believe what other people are saying about them instead of having a solid sense of self and knowing who they are organically and at a core level, lose that somehow. So, you know, being that I'm also a talent manager for nearly 3 decades, and I run a talent management company as my day job, as well as vice president of Stellar Communications, which is the public relations company that launched Secret. So I do lots and lots of things, and with regard to talent and Hollywood and the entertainment industry, it's very easy to get caught up in what reviews say about you. If you're in a play and a review says that you were terrible and you should get out of acting, or that you were wonderful and phenomenal and completely Grace Kelly or whatever, and you're feeling the pain and the trauma of being criticized, or you're feeling the elation and the complete euphoria of being lifted up and thought well of, if you're giving that kind of power to feeling bad or feeling good, then you're not feeling the right thing.
Yeah, that's, wow, what a great way. And it's interesting because you remind me of a personal story. As a kid growing up, I wanted more than anything in my life to be a professional basketball player. And I would practice some really, really ridiculous hours. And I remember my hands actually physically bleeding. I was a very hardworking kid, a disciplinarian for a father, and I wanted the best for my life, and I wanted to be a professional athlete more than anything else in this entire world. And when it didn't work out, and I got pneumonia, and the scholarships didn't come, I thought my life had ended. I thought everything in my life that I knew to be true and knew to be good was over forevermore, and that I had no reason to live for. This is, and we're talking about basketball, wasn't it? As I look back, I think, oh, well, how silly that was. But it's interesting because most of us do that to some extent and on some level, even today, even as adults, you know, we'll say, wow, you know, to say that we didn't win that award we thought we'd win, or we didn't get the bonus we thought we'd get, or something didn't work out. And it's interesting because at the end of the day, it's really just about a psychological attachment that you have to a specific identity or to something working out in a specific way. But what we always forget is that sometimes, you know, God or the universe or life force or whatever you want to call it, all that is, has a much bigger, better plan than we have for ourselves. And that's a very difficult thing for people to remember. But if the basketball had worked out for me, if I hadn't, and then later, if I hadn't lost that job with Deloitte, I would not be sitting on the phone now having this fantastic conversation with you now, Katie. And I just think that that's very interesting, and people, I think, more and more are learning that they need to make room and leave room for serendipity and synchronicity, and realize that, you know, life can only be lived forward but not really understood backwards.
Right, right. And the best way to make God laugh is to tell God your plan.
Yeah. And that's why I think one of the most important things that I've learned to do, and I think my clients are learning to do, and something that I hope to share with your listeners too, is that, you know, remember that at the end of the day, the only reason you want that new car, you want the new award, you want the new bonus, you want that new relationship, the only reason you want to do or be or have anything is because you think you'll feel better in having or being or doing it. You're really after a feeling, and I've noticed that in my life. I'm really after a feeling. If I didn't think the new car, the new relationship would make me feel better, I wouldn't be, you know, after those things at all. And when you can come to that conclusion, now you can shortcut the whole process and say, wait, if it doesn't work out, maybe there's something bigger and better ahead for me, or I can find another better feeling way to tell the story so that I feel good again, because the point is just to feel good. That's the entire point. It's the whole reason for, in, you know, aim and end of human existence. It's happiness. And that's something that Aristotle said, as well. So, if you can just sort of keep that in mind, it changes everything because, you know, suddenly, you're much more resilient and able to cope with adversity when it strikes.
You know, very well said. And I love synchronicity. As I was sitting here listening to you and preparing for my next question, I just opened your book Anywhere, which is what I do. I just tend to trust source to lead me to what the listeners want to know about. And I opened to page 104, which happens to be about changing your stories. And you just mentioned that while I turned that. So I have the Acadism. It's synchronicity is divinity showing off.
I love that. Yeah, there's I remember there's another fantastic expression that you remind me of, and that is that a coincidence is just a miracle. It's a miracle that God or the universe or life force doesn't take credit for. It's the same notion, and I love that. You know, one of the things that, and it's probably at the heart, I think, of my book, and it's probably at the heart of my philosophy, is that if you can find a way to explain experiences and bad things that happen in your life in a better feeling way, right? And meaning, and it only feels better if it's based in truth. But if you can find a way to tell the story to yourself in a way that feels better and is based in truth, I promise you, you'll begin to feel better. And as you begin to feel better, I promise you, you'll also begin to do better. It's scientifically proven. It's something that's been proven in my own life. And if anybody looks at their own life, they'll see that, that there's living proof there that all of this is true. And so, if you can, and telling a better feeling story is really about what scientists refer to as learned optimism. It's about resilience, coping mechanisms. But the way I like to tell people, because it seems so much more sort of manageable and so much sort of clearer for them, is to say, just find a way to tell a better feeling story about what happened. So, for instance, with me, you know, sometimes I say, well, I lost that job and it didn't work out very well. And at first, the first thing I said was, this is horrible. My life is over. But then as time went on, I said, you know what? Maybe this is a stepping stone to something greater. And I said, wait, not only that, but I didn't love that job anyway. And if I wasn't laid off, I probably wouldn't have quit. And, right? And this was even before any of the book or anything good was happening. I didn't have an apartment. I didn't have any money. I had to get rid of the two cars that I had. And things were not going well. But as I began to tell that better feeling story and began to realize, wait, this is fantastic. Maybe, you know, it's great that I don't have to go to work because now I have some freedom. Maybe I don't have money, but my life is prosperous in ways that go beyond money, right? Because I've got good friends, I've got good family, I've got good health. And so you can always find something to appreciate about your life. And as you look for those things to appreciate and tell a better feeling story about what's happening, you will feel better. And as you feel better, the success that you look that you're after and the change in the circumstances and conditions that you're after will also you know, manifest as well.
Yes, I couldn't agree with you more. And from a physics standpoint, once you start feeling better, you start vibrating better. Mm. And when you start vibrating what it is that you're wanting, the exact vibrational match will come to you because it's physics. Everything is energy. And when you're vibrating a better feeling, then you just keep attracting better feelings. And when you attract better, better circumstances. So
absolutely.
When you speak of a vibration and energy, it's the feeling is a vibration. Don't you agree?
Absolutely, because, well, then you become a vibrational match to the desires that you hold in your heart. And that's really what it's about. That, you know, and one of my favorite, you know, I love Abraham Hicks. I love The Secret. There's so many fantastic authors out there and spiritual teachers. And I think that one of my favorite sort of philosophies is exactly what you're saying, is that, you know, when you begin to think something, you begin to vibrate at a specific level. And specifically when you begin to feel something, you vibrate at a specific level. And, you know, any time that you're experiencing any kind of adversity in your life or any kind of problems or contrast in your life, you give birth to this brand new, fresh rocket of desire, and that your only job in life really is to become a vibrational match with that new desire that's been launched within you. And the way that you do that is by telling a better feeling story. It's by finding things to appreciate. It's by distracting yourself from the things that don't feel good and putting your attention on things that do feel good. And as you begin that upward spiral, very quickly you become a vibrational match with those desires. And before you know it, those desires that have been sitting for you, we know what they call vibrational escrow, begin to manifest, and those dreams that you have become the life that you live.
And you just described my relationship with my husband, because the fact we were devoting 60% of our day to personal development made us a vibrational match for one another.
Wow, that's powerful. That's powerful.
It's very powerful. And we're both left-handed, and we're both, you know, I met him because my radio show is Spiritual Hollywood, and the perfect, you know, you're a perfect guest for that, for this show as well. Rhonda Byrne is a perfect guest for this show, so I was looking for Rhonda Byrne. And John was her publicist, and that's how we met. And he blew me off twice in the beginning, and then realized that he just wasn't ready for me at the time. And we, through synchronicities and the universe pushing us towards each other, we got to see firsthand that we were a vibrational match. And that's why my soul brother relationship with him turned into a marriage.
Wow, that is such a powerful, powerful story. You know what you really reminded me of, Katie, give me shivers here, because there's just so much truth, I think, in what you're saying. And something that I remind myself over again is that every experience that you have in your life and every relationship you have in your life is a vibrational match for where you are in that particular moment. Every experience. And that, the sort of law of attraction really never fails you in that respect. And so, and a lot, oftentimes, what I've noticed about my own life is that it's not even so much that I need to worry about sort of slamming on the gas pedal and getting myself up to speed sort of with my desire, as much as it is sometimes letting go of the resistance that I have inside that prevents me from realizing whatever dream or desire or goal that I have. And that resistance takes all kinds of forms. Sometimes it's disbelief, sometimes it's lack of faith, sometimes it's insecurity, but it's mostly just fear and a lack of belief in one extent or the other. So I love that you have that you sort of shared that story with us, because I'm assuming that some part of you at that particular time had a little resistance about it, and that when you began to let go of that resistance, the relationship took on a sort of a new flavor.
Oh, it totally did. And, you know, it's when there are so many reasons not to move forward towards something, you just got to surrender and let go and go for it. And also, when you're focusing on, like you said, you even if you don't know what you're thinking or what your thoughts are, they too, to the universe, are rockets of desire. So you cannot hide from your secret thoughts. And if you don't know what your secret thoughts are, like if it's self-sabotaging or you're criticizing yourself all the time and you're so used to it that you don't even know it, that self-criticism is also a rocket of desire that you're sending out to the universe. And the universe says, I heard that at your service, and brings you a traffic ticket, a fender bender, an argument, a fallout at your job, you know, all those things. So it really behooves us to start stalking our thoughts. Look underneath everything. And if you're wearing a smile but you're dying inside, then you're way out of integrity with your true nature.
Wow. You know, I think that's that reminds me of something sort of very valuable that I found in my life, and that is that if you notice that, and some people say, they'll say, what you said is so beautiful, and then I'll say sometimes almost that, maybe not quite as eloquently, to my clients, and they'll say, well, Rob, does that mean that I need to watch every single thought? And I said, I know it seems really time-consuming and tedious and monotonous to watch every thought, so you don't necessarily have to watch every thought, but what you do have to be, is be sensitive and to tune in to how you feel moment by moment. And as you notice that you're not feeling particularly good, you have to realize that there's an automatic thought going on beneath the surface, what you've referred to as a secret thought. And if you can just find that thought and question it and ask yourself, is it really true? Do you know it's 100% true without any question at all, without any doubt at all? And then turn it on its head, you'll find that most of those thoughts that you're having are a result, or most of the sort of the negative emotion that you're having is a result of some kind of negative automatic thought, and that those thoughts aren't true, and that you don't need to believe every thought that goes through your head. And you can change it. It's just a thought can be changed. And so you are just absolutely on target there. And I think that, you know, one thing that can help people sort of weed through that is to realize that if you can't, it's very difficult to watch every single thought. If you can't watch every single thought, at least pay attention to how you feel and how your body feels. And you'll notice that when you're not feeling well or not feeling particularly good, you're unease, experiencing unease or frustration or anger, or you're feeling down, that there's a thought behind it.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing that I've noticed is I have a fantastically bright, wonderful new stepdaughter who's 9 years old. Mm-hmm. And when I say to her that those thoughts you're having aren't real, mm-hmm. that they are an illusion, and yeah. what you're feeling afraid of isn't really there,
yes.
well, how would you feel if you knew that what you're thinking today will create happiness in your future, sadness in your future, fear in your future? Mm. If you knew you had the power over that, what would you choose instead? She said,
yeah.
would choose happy. I said, then how can we look at this now the way that will bring you happiness in your future?
Yes.
And we'll talk it through. And she takes it on, and she incorporates it, and she shifts her consciousness in that split second, and
yeah.
the lights come on, and you can't unring that bell. And, you know, enlightenment is irreversible. And when you watch a child's eyes light up like that and they get it,
yeah.
you just go, we all have that capability.
Yeah.
I'm also a life coach. And when I coach grown-ups in their 80s who are just have had this issue, they can't let go of their whole life, and then I approach them like that as if they're a child, they finally get it and they know happiness after
that. Wow. Wow, that's so great. I've had similar experiences with my clients, because, you know, occasionally we'll talk about imagination and telling a better feeling story, and they'll say, well, Rob, it's very difficult for me to tell a better feeling story. I don't have that great of an imagination. And I said, it's interesting that you say that, because in a way, if you look very closely, you'll notice that you've imagined all kinds of worst-case scenarios right now, and you've put words to them, and we're having a conversation about those worst-case scenarios right now. So you have a very vivid imagination. The only problem is that you haven't applied it in a positive direction. And so it's like anything. With a little bit of practice, you become better and better at applying it in a positive direction. But we all have incredible, incredible imaginations. I mean, we dream up the most worst-case scenarios possible, and we share those stories with others on a daily basis. And you can just find a way to spin that and do it in a more positive direction. Your life will get better. Everybody else's lives around you will get better, and everybody will be better off in the long run. But it just takes a little practice.
Yep. And I think everybody has seen at least one child in their life take their first steps.
Mm, yeah.
And it didn't happen overnight. It took a little over a year. You know, some sooner, some later. And it
yeah.
takes just about a year to learn to walk.
I think that's, there you go. That's a perfect example. You know, if you think about it, you know, English was really, really difficult until it became easy. You know, everything is difficult until it becomes easy. Everything that you've ever done in your life. And often most of us will get frustrated because we're on a new diet, or we're trying to do something from a professional perspective, or we're trying to make some kind of change in our personal lives. But the truth is that, and we get frustrated, but the truth is that, you know, it's really discontent that is the first step towards change and towards progress. And, you know, if you didn't try, you wouldn't make any change. And most of us wouldn't try unless we are forced to. And that's what discontent sort of does. And that's what frustration does. It causes you to forces you to try. But realize that the 1,000-mile journey begins with one step. So just put one step in front of the other, in front of the other. And before you know it, you know, you've made that 1,000-mile journey. And, or you've made that, 15, you've had that, you know, hour-long, conversation like we have, and it feels like 15 minutes.
Yeah, it's wonderful. And I want to give your website to our listeners again. It's www.happinessfromtheinsideout.com. And the life coaching site for Rob is robmaclifecoach.com. And I would highly recommend that anybody who's going through a struggle and just needs some action steps on how to get back to your true nature and your divinity, and this is a radio show where you can talk about true nature and divinity, because that's really the essence of who all of us are. And it just got bombarded with some tarnish, and this book is some great silver polish to bring out your shine again. And when I picked it up and started reading it, I had some questions about some things, and then I started reading about attachment and how I was attaching an outcome to circumstances that I had no control over, and I had no idea I was doing that.
And
I sat down and I thought about it, and I went through what's going on in my life that I'm shouting no at. And you know, when you shout no at something, it's going to get stronger.
Yeah.
And I was looking at what I was shouting no at, and I'm looking at going, wow, I've just got all kinds of attachment all over every one of those circumstances. I've taken the free will away from every person that I'm upset with, wanting them to do it my way, and they're not doing it my way, and why aren't they doing it my way? And then I happen to remember, well, they got no business doing it my way. They got business doing it their way.
Wow.
And then I came to terms with, well, what can I like about the way they're doing it? I know there's something good about everything, and there's something perfect about everything. And I started looking at what's good about what they're doing. What's good about what their approach is?
Wow.
How is it helping? How is it positive? How is it actually teaching me? How is it my teacher right now? And what those people were doing that bothered me caused me to reflect on myself to see what part of me that was causing that conflict. And when I got that I was the culprit in the whole thing, I forgave myself.
Mm. That's so superb. It's often said that, you know, we best teach where we most need to learn. And I think that's one of the things with the, you know, and I appreciate that comment that you made about the book and about that particular section of the book, because that's something that I learn over and over again. And, you know, it's really, really fascinating how much of our happiness we attach to specific conditions or circumstances working on a very, very specific way. And what we forget is that, like we said before, that sometimes, you know, God or the universe has a bigger, better plan for you than you have for yourself, for one, and then for two, there are at least two different kinds of freedom. There's freedom of action, which is what most of us think of when we think about freedom. We think, if I can only find a way to control the conditions and circumstances and people in my life, then I can create this perfect life. And in this perfect life, I'll find happiness there too. And unfortunately, that just doesn't work at all. First of all, everybody else's happiness is their responsibility. You know, your happiness is your responsibility. My happiness is my responsibility. And so that's the first reason it doesn't work. but then, you know, the other reason too is that you can never create a perfect life. That even if you were given all the tools and a magic genie showed up today and said, here is a magic wand, create circumstances and conditions any way you want them to, before you know it, you would say, wow, it's interesting, I chose this car and I chose this relationship and I chose this and that, but realizing that none of those circumstances can ever be perfect. There's no such thing as a quote-unquote perfect life. There are always going to be negative and positive aspects to everything. For every opportunity that you choose, you miss some other opportunity somewhere else. And so if you can come to that realization and basically come to the conclusion that if you just do your best to focus on those positive aspects that are working out for you, very soon your life will become full of nothing but positive aspects. But no matter where you go, there will always be, you know, two sides of the stick. There will be the side of the stick doesn't smell too well, and the side of the stick that is smooth and feels great to the touch. And so your only job or my only job is really just to pay attention to the end of the stick that you love. Pay attention and cast your gaze to the sunny side of the sidewalk, and increasingly your life will become nothing but, you know, sunny sidewalks.
Well, that's very true, and also, you can't know light without dark, and you can't know freedom without confinement. So contrast is really a necessary side of the coin, and when you become friends with contrast and expect to see it everywhere, you no longer judge that there's something wrong there, because it's just contrast.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, adversity and contrast does something. There are some really, really incredible benefits to adversity and contrast. And I think the biggest benefit is that sort of contrast lets you get very, very clear on what it is that you don't want. And in that same breath, it helps you get very clear on what it is that you do want. Without contrast, you know, as they say, the sweet wouldn't be so sweet without the sour. And that's absolutely true of your life. If you look at the moments in your life when you've appreciated health most, it's been when you've been unhealthy. When you've appreciated having money the most, it's been when you haven't had very much. And if you've asked, and if you would ask anybody and say, would you ever want to never feel thirst again? Or would you ever want to never be hungry again? Or would you ever not to have sexual urging or longing again? Most people would say, absolutely not. I love those feelings as long as I know that something good is coming after it, that I will be satisfied, of this desire, after, you know, a short period of time. And so most of us sort of forget that. We think that, you know, situations or adversity is going to last forever, but it doesn't last forever. Everything nothing is temporary. Everything will eventually evolve into something better and better and better if you look for it and if you set up your life in that way. So adversity plays an incredibly important role, helps you clarify what it is that you want in your life. And then beyond that, it also helps you slow down, take stock of your life, and reprioritize what's important. You know, we're basically saying the same thing in two different ways. But without adversity, most of us would proceed way too quickly in the wrong direction. We'd work way too hard at the wrong things.
Yeah, and also adversity can be a great road mark.
Mm.
It can be a signpost for you. Like, okay, lady or guy, you're going down the wrong road here. Why don't you turn around and turn left down the street?
So, great example.
Yeah, adversity can actually cause you to, like for instance, I was married before, and I'm still very good friends with my former husband. He actually came to my wedding with my present husband and took us to lunch. And I knew that because that relationship didn't work out that, you know, it takes two to tango, and what part of it was me. And that's what caused me to go on that inner journey of spending 60% of my day on personal development to find out what parts of myself didn't work in that relationship.
Yeah.
And it took the adversity of that relationship to get me to use the adversity from it to polish myself into the diamond that my partner today recognized.
Wow. Yeah, I think that what you're saying certainly resonates with me. And what you're saying, I think, in a nutshell, is that every experience and relationship in your life and everything that occurs in your life really serves as a mirror to reflect who you are back to yourself. And I think that relationships specifically work that way. And often, you know, the other way of saying that is, of course, is that relationships and money and experience in your life magnify what's already there, and then just make it clearer and more visible. And so if everybody could begin to look at relationships in quite the way that you did there, Katie, I think we would all be better off, and we'd all find very quickly that when adversity strikes, that adversity helps us to clarify our values. It sort of acts as a signpost to tell us if we're heading the right direction or the wrong direction, and get clear about what it is that we want, what it is that we don't want. And most importantly, it helps us weed out the relationships that aren't working for us and cultivate or strengthen the relationships that remain.
And make room for them.
Absolutely. That's another great way of putting it, is that, you know, sometimes in order to make room for the new, you've got to clean out the old. And adversity plays that role. It helps us to clean out what's old, what's no longer working for us. And sometimes we all sort of freak out and say, oh my goodness, what's happening? I just lost my job. I just lost my partner. I just lost so much money. But you have no idea the sort of the riches and the prosperity and the love that may be on its way to you.
That is on its way to you. Prepared for it, because when you do that emotional feng shui on yourself, which adversity is a wonderful tool for,
right,
and you're willingness is the key, and you have the insight to look at what part was you and you're not doing the blame game, then you already are wealthy, because that mindset will bring you everything that you ever dreamed of and more.
Absolutely. And I found that, you know, I can say, and the reason that resonates with me so deeply is because it's something that I've experienced in my life over and over again, that, you know, it's been in times of my sort of deepest and greatest trials and tribulations that when I begin to practice that approach, those trials and tribulations became my greatest triumphs, you know. And I just think that there's such poignancy in what you have to say there, and I think that people are increasingly getting that message.
Yeah, and I used to have a quote that I put at the signature of my email that said, the greatest thing I've ever done was my last mistake.
Wow, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. If we could only sort of always operate from that broader perspective, always operate from that position of knowing that you can't ever get it wrong in life. And that the reason you can't get it wrong is because you never get it done. That life, it's not like life, most of us sort of live our lives like we're trying to get to the end of the internet, as if that were possible, or that we're trying to complete this checklist or this to-do list. But the truth is that you never get to the end of the internet. You never get to the end of your to-do list. And the only reason you're doing any of that is for a feeling. And if you can realize it's the feeling you're after and just make feeling good your goal, all of this takes care of itself.
It does. And if you really got that you never get to the end of your existence and your energy experience going from one lifetime to the next, and you don't have to be a believer in that to take on what it is I'm saying, if you thought of this lifetime as simply putting on an outfit that you really love and making it look just the way you want it to look, that each lifetime might be just in the flicker of an eye or the blink of an eye or a flicker of a flame where you basically did. This whole lifetime was just you getting dressed and looking the way you wanted to look and improving upon that from lifetime to lifetime. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think and what I'm getting there, too, is this notion that, and something that I really, really do believe, that most of us experience sort of great trauma in our life, and we struggle so much and are frustrated so much because we take what we have to think, we take life so seriously in one respect, meaning that we take our thoughts very seriously and we take everything so seriously, which can be a good thing, right? Because you want to put the energy and the time and the effort in, that's okay. But when you take everything so seriously about your life and you don't keep it playful and creative and keep it and realize that you want to, that the point of life is to have fun and to enjoy yourself and that it's good to feel good, now everything becomes a major, major problem. Every molehill is now a mountain. And so, one of the things that I'm really hearing through you now that's really coming through clearly is that, one of the most important things you can do is just take yourself and your life less seriously and realize that everything that happens in your life happens for a reason, that things at the end of the day will turn out well if you find a way to spin them in a way that feels better. And so I just love what you have to say there, Katie.
Yeah, and if you believe that they will work out, they will work out. They totally will. They always do. And we've come to the end of our Spiritual Hollywood Hour. Actually, we've run over by a minute.
Wow.
And I just want to thank you so much, Rob Mack, for being my guest this evening. I've thoroughly enjoyed this conversation. Your website, happinessfromtheinsideout.com. Get the book, everybody. Just do yourself a favor. Happiness from the Inside Out, the art and science of fulfillment. And you'll find surprises in this book that you didn't expect based on this very, very enlightened, handsome person that's been on this journey, and he's so young. You would think that this kind of wisdom wouldn't be in a book like this, but there's so much wisdom in there that you would really do yourself a favor to pick up a copy and read it and share it with others. Thank you again for being my guest tonight, Rob, and thank you, everybody, for listening. My website is guardianangelmanagement.com, all spelled out, no spaces. Just thought I'd throw that in. For some reason, somebody wanted to know it, including you, Rob. Take a check out and send me an email and stay in touch with me. Good night, everybody, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you, Katie.